and welcome to Bare Naked Politics, the podcast for people who want to keep up with the headlines, but who are in no way and who declare in no way to be politics experts. To be honest, very few people are politics experts. That's what I think, despite it feeling a little bit like the media demands it of us sometimes. But good on you for admitting that you're not. That makes you the anomaly on the average Facebook newsfeed. I'm Julia Bell, and today, after a brief hiatus from being unwell, sorry about that, I was really genuinely so unwell, it was not fun, I'm going to run you through the fallout from this vote of no confidence that happened on June the 6th, 2022. Yes, indeed, after months of speculation, it finally happened. Last week, Sir Graham Brady, who is the chair of the 1922 committee, this committee of backbench Conservative MPs, he received the required amount of letters, 54 letters, to trigger a vote of no confidence in the Prime Minister, which put the Prime Minister in a really perilous position because potentially he could have lost his job. As you'll know, because I've covered it loads, that is how it works. Conservative MPs have to write to the 1922 committee, this backbench committee, voicing their discontent in their leader if they want to trigger a vote to potentially get rid of that leader. It's just how it works for the Conservatives. It's different for each party. 15% of them need to have written letters in order to trigger that vote. And with the current number that the Conservatives have in Parliament, 15% of them makes 54 MPs. So that's why that number has been so important for so many months. People have been watching and counting it up. And then it came about. It happened. So why did it come about? To be honest, I doubt any of you are asking that. Because I've talked about it for ages, and so has everybody. But of course, you know, this is after the Sue Gray report into the Partygate scandal was published. Following that, obviously, you know, that was from the Met Police having issued the Prime Minister a fine for breaking his own lockdown rules. As much as he say, you know, says it was unwitting, he still got a fine. So that is the law proclaiming officially that he broke his own rules. And so, like I say, in this episode, I'm going to run you through the results, the immediate aftermath, and what it all might mean going forward. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. And also click 5 stars. If you're listening on Spotify, you can now rate the podcast. And if you give it 5 stars, it makes other people more inclined to give it a go. So that's good for me, frankly, to grow the podcast. So if it's helpful for you, then it might be helpful for other people. Give it 5 stars. It takes you about 0.1 seconds. And it's really helpful. So please do that. Follow the new Instagram account, by the way, at Bare Naked Politics. It's a really helpful resource. Lots of little explainers on there, episode teasers and so on. And without further ado, let's talk about, I suppose, one of the more inconvenient moments in Boris Johnson's career, which, as you know, has been rather littered with those, so it's been pretty stiff competition. Okay, so as we know, Boris Johnson survived the no confidence vote, but what is the rundown? How close was it? What were the numbers? Okay, so all 359 Tory MPs took part. 211 of those supported Boris Johnson, so they voted that they had confidence in him, as it were. And that means 148 voted against. 211 for, 148 against. It's not close. Do you know what I mean? So that was quite shocking, I think. Let's listen to those results as Graham Brady announced them.
I can report as returning officer that 359 ballots were cast. No spoiled ballots. That the vote in favour of having confidence in Boris Johnson as leader was 211 votes, and the vote against was 148 votes. And therefore, I can announce that the Parliamentary Party does have confidence.
Yeah. Okay, you can hear from the cheers that there were lots of people that were happy about this result, lots of people happy that Boris Johnson is, I suppose, safe. But that result means that more than 40% of the MPs in Boris Johnson's own party that he leads wanted to get rid of him, voted against him. And according to the BBC, even the kind of main group of rebels weren't expecting a result that was that high. You know, throughout the day, they'd been saying, oh, like a good result would be 100. That would be a good result for what, you know, for our cause. And 148 actually voted that way. So it's interesting to think that I guess there were a few people that were, I suppose, secretly really cross with Boris Johnson, but didn't want to particularly come out and be public about it. But, you know, there was a bigger group against him than perhaps we thought. But then, of course, on the other side of things, you've got his diehard supporters. I mean, Jacob Rees-Mogg is one of them. It's not news to anybody. He told the BBC that even winning by one vote, even Boris Johnson getting one vote more in his favour, would be enough for Johnson to move on with the confidence of the party. Quite a disputed claim, I suppose, but, you know, he's saying rules are rules. If you get more than half, then that's it. You're fine. And everyone should stop talking about it. The voting is all done in secret. So that means that Boris Johnson won't know exactly who voted against him, although it's pretty schoolyard from my assessment. So, like, he'll have a bit of an idea about a lot. He'll have a bit of an idea about how a lot of people voted. I imagine the people that voted for him will be quite open about that to his face. Like, I had your back. We can't know what happens behind closed doors. And of course, some of them have chosen to go public with how they voted anyway, you know. I thought it was quite telling that some of them waited until after the result to share that they had his back. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, I always had confidence in Prime Minister. But that was after, you know, he was safe. Interesting. This is politics, though, and that's the kind of thing that you can expect. And it's not particularly surprising, I suppose. The message from lots of backbench MPs was that, like, this wasn't an easy decision for them. And they were sort of tasked with weighing up, you know, what's morally right, number one, what is intrinsically right and wrong, versus what do my constituents want? What do the people that I'm actually representing want me to do? Because that's actually the bottom line of what I should be doing. And then there's also the sort of personal career point here about, like, I want to retain my seat in the next election. And this is a real concern for lots of them, because Boris Johnson is seen as a guy who wins elections, right? Like, particularly in those areas known as the former Red Wall, these more traditionally Labour voting strongholds in the likes of the northwest of England, who had been Labour, 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 and then they voted Tory when Boris Johnson was in charge. That was like a, oh my God, moment. And so, for example, Conservatives in those areas will have been like, well, am I on borrowed time? And if the one guy who seems to have led the charge for me winning this seat, if I go against him, surely I've got no chance. There would have been all of that sort of stuff happening that will have fed into these decisions. So it will have been like a hotbed of overthinking in Parliament to lead up to this vote. And it's not just backbenchers. There are 13 MPs who hold positions in the government, so in Boris Johnson's government, that he's put in positions of power, who have not shared which way they voted. 13 of them at the time of recording. So I'm recording on the evening of the Monday of 13th of June. They have not come forward to say, oh yeah, I voted for him or I voted against him. And that does get you thinking, well, how did you vote? And I'm sure Boris Johnson is definitely thinking that, including Alex Chalk, the Secretary General, so MP for Cheltenham. It's a very marginal seat. It voted Remain, even though, of course, in the Brexit vote, which of course Boris Johnson was all about Leave. So, you know, there are some people who are kind of walking a tightrope that it's quite mysterious which way they voted. And it's very clear that there had been quite a conflicted decision. And what did Boris Johnson say? And what did the opposition make of it all? Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the reactions. So this is what Johnson himself had to say. Have a listen to this.
So, well, I think this is a very good result for politics and for the country. Just in
it's
just
result.
I do just in this sense, I think it's a convincing result, a decisive result, and what it means is that as a government we can move on and focus on the stuff that I think really matters to people. I'm grateful to colleagues. I'm grateful for the support that they've given me, and of course I understand that what we need to do now is come together. As a government, as a party, and that is exactly what we can now do.
So as you can hear, this, to his mind, is a quote-unquote decisive result. You know, he's very much ready to move on. Who's surprised by that? Nobody. But as you can imagine, Keir Starmer doesn't quite have that approach. This is what he had to say about it.
This evening, the Conservative Party had a decision to make,
to show some backbone or to back Boris Johnson. The British public are fed up with a Prime Minister who promises big but never delivers, fed up with a Prime Minister who's presided over a culture of lies and law-breaking at the heart of government, fed up with a Prime Minister who is utterly unfit for the great office that he holds. Conservative MPs made their choice tonight. They have ignored the British public and hitched themselves and their party firmly to Boris Johnson and everything that he represents.
So the question is Johnson out of the woods? You know, is this him done? Can he wash his hands of the whole kind of Partygate thing? And the police gave him a fine. Sue Gray was extremely cutting. And he had to deal with a vote of no confidence. But has he kind of battled his way through it and is he out the other side? So here's the thing. Technically, he can't face another confidence vote or no confidence vote now for 12 months. That's technically the rules. These are the rules of the 1922 committee, this group of backbench MPs led by Sir Graham Brady, who managed this process. Although, it's come to light this week that that's actually an unwritten rule, that there are rumours the committee might consider actually changing. So Sir Graham Brady himself said it's quote, technically possible. And one thing that I think is really important to talk about that's been brought up a lot throughout this is the fact that Theresa May, Boris Johnson's predecessor, who stood down in the kind of mess of Brexit and not being able to get her version of how Brexit should look across the line, not being able to get enough support for that, we all remember that. She faced a vote of no confidence in 2018 and she won the support of 63% of the MPs in her party at the time. That's higher than the 59% that Boris Johnson just got, right? And she ended up resigning 6 months later because she could not get this Brexit deal through Parliament. And you'll remember there were votes after votes after votes. She couldn't make it work. But she got more support proportionately than Boris Johnson did. And as you can imagine, there's been lots of comparisons drawn here with Johnson's opponent suggesting that, well, does that mean he's on borrowed time as well? Is this a pattern? And could he face a similar fate? But that just talks about the proportionality. That ignores the fact that he has an 80-seat majority. So he's enjoying more freedom, really, as leader than Theresa May ever did. Because if you think about the scenario that she faced, it was totally different. She failed to win a majority at all in the 2017 general election. And she'd been forced to, if you remember, like essentially strike a deal with the Northern Irish DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party. And she kind of relied on those 10 seats that they had to support her and get her over the line to get that majority. So that was, I mean, she was just in this basically a quote unquote minority government. And so when it came to the Brexit deal and all the problems with the Irish border, she was just finding it impossible. So you can't compare apples to oranges in many ways. I would say, even though that commentary is really interesting, don't get sucked into it and just assume that like, oh, I mean, I don't know why anyone listening to this podcast would think that there's patterns in politics. There aren't. It's total chaos. And I think I'd be careful, again, drawing any patterns here. As well, Theresa May stepped down, at least from her perspective, at least from what she said, by her own volition, right? She stepped down and she said, you know, I can't do this. That's not Boris Johnson's style. And it's not just me who thinks that. It's everyone who thinks that. If you check out this YouGov poll that I looked at today, after the vote, it was the day after the confidence vote, the vote of no confidence, it showed that only 1% of the public thought that he would, quote unquote, definitely resign. So it's pretty common as a understanding of Boris Johnson's approach to politics that he's not one for the resigning. He's one for the gripping in and seeing things through, even when many are calling for him to resign. And then just on this topic about is Boris Johnson out the woods when it comes to scrutiny of his behaviour and his practice as Prime Minister. Not really, no. Because, of course, there's also, along with all the other stuff I've talked about, this Parliamentary Privileges Committee, which is currently doing an investigation into whether Boris Johnson knowingly, and that's very important, knowingly misled Parliament over Partygate when he said that no rules were broken. Did he intentionally mislead Parliament, which is, you know, a really damning offence in UK politics, and I guess all politics. Well, that committee is likely to give their report in the autumn, so it's a longer stretching thing, and they could uncover more evidence and kind of further photos that haven't already been seen. We've had lots of photos, but there could be more, you don't know. There could just be more things that come out. So there is the kind of the anticipation of that. And it's as if Boris Johnson, if blips in a political career were trees, Boris Johnson would be in the densest section of the Amazon. It appears that as Partygate rumbles on, he's never really going to be in the clear. Or at least this next step is going to take us through till autumn, and it could unearth yet more. And just on this thing about, you know, knowingly misleading Parliament, that is one of the points, or it was one of the points, of conduct in the ministerial code. I've talked about the ministerial code before. It's this kind of written rule book that each prime minister can add to and embellish, and they have to sign it off to say, yeah, this is the code. And traditionally, if a minister broke that code, it would be absolutely expected of them to resign. That's just the etiquette of, you know, British parliamentary politics. But Boris Johnson, well, a few weeks ago, in some extremely interesting timing, Boris Johnson made some updates to said code, which means that a resignation won't actually be necessarily expected if they're found to have broken it. And ministers could instead offer, quote, some form of public apology, remedial action, or removal of ministerial salary for a period. So you can look to get punished without resigning in this sort of updated version of the ministerial code. Extremely interesting timing, but that's the update. Okay, and then just what's next? You know, what does this do to politics in the grand scheme of things in the UK? What's it going to affect? Boris Johnson now has his sights firmly set on looking forward. But that might be difficult because there are these two by-elections that are coming up on the 23rd of June, which is very close to the day I'm recording this episode. And just for those of you who need to brush up a little bit on this, a by-election is basically just what happens when an area, a constituency, needs to vote for a new MP outside of a normal election cycle. So that MP that they have needs to be replaced, so they quickly do an election just exclusively for that constituency. It might be because that MP died, it might be because they needed to resign, they were forced to resign, or it might be because they left that post for whatever reason. So two of those are happening at once on the 23rd of June. Two different constituencies are forced to replace the MP that they currently have. One of those is in Wakefield, after the former Conservative MP Imran Ahmad Khan resigned, having been convicted of sexually assaulting a 15-year-old boy and jailed for 18 months. The other constituency who's having a by-election is Tiverton and Honiton. That was triggered when another, again, Conservative MP, this time Neil Parish, stood down. And that was after he admitted to watching porn in the House of Commons, which I'm sure is a story that you heard about. So according to the polls, the Conservatives are expected to lose both seats. It's not massively surprising considering both outgoing MPs were shrouded in you know, deeply, deeply negative discourse. You might be thinking, well, who is set to replace them? And this is not definite. You know what it's like. The polls are not always right. In fact, they're very regularly wrong. But the polls at the moment are saying that the Conservatives, like I say, are expected to lose both. Wakefield are set to see a Labour victory if things go according to what the polls are predicting. Tiverton and Honiton is looking to go to the Lib Dems, again, if the polls are right. Now, if this happens, and if both seats, well, if one or both seats is taken from the Conservatives and given to a different party, there could be renewed pressure, you know, on the Prime Minister. Just to sort of say, well, hang on, I know you absolutely smashed the last election, but you are now bad news, because look at the impact. People will draw comparisons to what is happening to Boris Johnson and these by-elections. It's an absolute fact. And so will the media, right? They will say, you know, if these by-elections go to Labour or the Lib Dems or whoever else, they're going to say, ah, look at this. This is because of all the scandal that's been surrounding not just the outgoing MPs from the Conservative Party in those seats, but also the Prime Minister and his government as a whole. That being said, because we've had this vote of no confidence and because those voices have been heard and that debate has been, I suppose, settled at least for the time being, I don't think these by-elections are likely to trigger another vote of no confidence. I don't think if there was a Tory MP who was on the fence about writing a letter to the 1922 committee, I don't necessarily think a by-election loss would be enough to tip them over the edge if all the other stuff hasn't been already, if that makes sense. And you might be wondering, you know, what do the public actually think? Because obviously this vote of no confidence, it showed us how Conservative MPs feel about Boris Johnson, how he's doing as Prime Minister. But what are the public saying? And you know, arguably that's the thing that really matters. Well, YouGov do a monthly poll on this question. Quote, how well is Boris Johnson doing as Prime Minister? And the latest one shows that 69% of the British public think he's doing, quote unquote, badly. 69% of the British public think he's doing badly. So that is, you know, even more people than was the case this time last year. This time last year, 48% thought he was doing badly. Now it's more like 70%. So that is quite a descent in terms of public opinion on the Prime Minister. And then on the 7th of June, this is the day after the confidence vote, YouGov found that 60% of people thought he should resign. But, and again, this is quite interesting, 87% thought he probably or definitely wouldn't. So it seems the public know the score, like I say, and they know that Johnson isn't one for the resigning. Thing is, though, and I've said this ad infinitum on this podcast, we're not due a general election for a bit. 2024 is technically, you know, May the 2nd is when the formal next general election is supposed to be set for. These things can change. But that is long enough away for literally the whole world to turn itself upside down and back again. Do you know what I mean? Politics changes way quicker and more dramatically in way less time than the 2 years we have before the next general election. And while it does feel like we've had a lot of elections over the past few years, because we have, it is fairly unusual for a sitting government to call an election early unless they have something to gain. It wouldn't be like, oh, let's just do it. Let's just take a massive risk. It would have to be like, this is unmanageable, so we need to do an election to get our validity and to be able to make waves. That's what Boris Johnson did in 2019. He was going off of the minority government, essentially, that Theresa May handed him, and he thought, this isn't doable. So his strategist, Dominic Cummings, being a key part of it, said, let's have a general election. We'll push Brexit really hard. We'll hopefully get a much chunkier majority, and then we can start making changes without all this lag. That's exactly what happened. So that kind of circumstance is why sitting governments call elections. We're not in that situation now. Boris Johnson has a chunky majority. He's in a horrible position, public opinion wise. It would be a huge gamble for him to call an election now. He would almost certainly, in my opinion, and what do I know? Truly, I seem to get everything wrong, but he would almost certainly lose seats. So, like, I don't imagine that this is high on his agenda. We saw this in 2017 when Theresa May called that snap election. She lost her majority. And I think Boris Johnson, you know, he's a history fan. We know that. This is pretty recent history. He's going to be learning from it and taking note of it. And probably, well, he was asked about it this week, actually. Quote, he said, not interested in snap elections.
I'm certainly not interested in snap elections. What I'm interested in is delivering right now for the people of this country.
So there you go. The message since that vote has very much been one of, right, cool, that was painful, let's draw a line under it and move on. Boris Johnson gave that message to the cabinet the morning after the vote. Why do I know that? Because cabinet meetings are now recorded for public broadcast. Have a listen.
Good morning, Cabinet. Thank you all very much. Very good to see you all. And I think thank you, by the way, for everybody, for all your good work yesterday, because which was a very important day, because we're able now to draw a line under the issues that our opponents want to talk about, and we're able to get on with talking about what I think the people of this country want us to talk about, which is what we are doing to help them and to take the country forward. And that is what we're going to do. We're going to focus exclusively on that.
So there you go. Johnson said, now is the time to focus on what, quote, matters to the public. And he clearly thinks that this confidence vote and party gate and all that stuff is no longer something the British public cares about. I'm not 100% sure that's true, but perhaps you have some insight. I'd love to know what you think. Is this stuff important? And is Boris Johnson safe? I want to know what you think. And the best way to keep in touch with us, and I say us because there's a team behind the scenes now, is the Instagram account at Bare Naked Politics. Give it a follow. Lots of helpful, juicy explainers. It can be like your little cheat sheet for what's happening in politics. You can use it. It'll make things make sense. It's written in a language you can understand. I often do little stories on there, and we'll put more and more content up as time goes on. So it's really worth following. It's free. You just follow it and it's helpful content on your Instagram feed. What is there to lose? Absolutely nothing. So give that a follow. Let me know what you think. Comment on the post. Send messages. Get involved in the polls. And before I let you go, I will ask, please do become a patron if you can. It's the only way to keep this podcast going. It's a great community on there. And the link is in the episode description. I'd like to thank Hannah Anderson for co-producing. Hannah, you're so good. Thank you so much for your help. And that's it. Hannah's come up with a cool idea. We're going to potentially do a bit of a deep dive into Welsh politics, because there's all sorts of very dramatic changes happening on the scene in Wales and within the Welsh Parliament. It'd be quite cool to explore that. Keep your eyes peeled for that. Thank you again for listening, and I'll speak to you in the next one. Goodbye.